It was the year of deep geeking.
The year of Feedbackapalooza.
The year we discussed our favorite show.
It was the year without Zima.
The year of great tequila.
The year of puns.
And a year of more interviews.
It was a new chance for fun.
It was the end of the series.
It was the year we made it to Crusade.
The year is 2009. The show, Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Jeffrey.
Just Jeffrey.
Just Jeffrey.
That's okay.
So how about the burning question of how the Minbari actually shaped the bone?
It's genetic, Jeffrey. I don't think there's
they
any
shape. They go to a bonologist and have it shaved down a little bit, do you think?
Ooh, that's a good question. I wonder if there was there, ever...
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder
there's
if there
a,
was...
There's a little white and red striped barber pole outside the certain areas, and they go in with finely tuned crystals, and...
and they whittle them down into different shapes. That's... Yeah.
You can have a bone updo.
Right.
Or you can wear your bone down.
I wonder if
down
you get a bone or a bone coloring.
Bone, but you can probably do that too, sure. I'm sure in some tribes that's pretty hot.
Well, you know, you get the ghetto Minbari going on. They've got the little spanglies on the things and the various weird stripes and whatnot.
Excellent. Let's go to the voicemail.
Oh,
fans have to say.
I didn't think we'd reach this point until we got to episode 200.
Do you know that this is episode 165, which is just shy of 7 straight nonstop days. 165 episodes is 6.875 days of nonstop Babylon 5 recording. If we just sat down for a week straight, didn't breathe, didn't poo, didn't do nothing, that's the equivalent of all the shows we've done, the number of hours.
So if you stacked up each episode of the Babylon Podcast end to end, it would reach the moon?
Speaking of the moon, was there a date in history you wanted to talk about, Tim?
I did want to bring this up because I think this is one of the most significant dates even in Babylon 5 history. I believe it's in the chronology. July 16th, which is actually tomorrow, which means it'll be a week behind for those who are not live feeding. It is the liftoff, the 40th anniversary of the liftoff of Apollo 11, with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins heading for the moon. And then on the 20th, that is the 40th anniversary of that first lunar landing.
I actually remember
dates,
that.
Let's get back to the B5.
So I was going to say, you're going off topic now. Exactly. Get back to B5. You can't talk about anything but B5.
You do not talk about
Fight right.
Club.
All right.
Was there air conditioning in those little trams? You know, the trams that used to zip them along through the center of the core? Do you think they had air conditioning in there?
Yes.
Like, was it nice and cool?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nah. Did you need maybe a little travel jacket or sweater? Maybe a little Argyle?
That depends upon what planet you come from. If you come from a warm weather planet, you probably would have to... what, be stripped down because it's too cold?
No. And as
a carrier, you have to bundle up because it's too cold. Now, if you came from a frigid world, if you were like from, I don't know, if a couple universes over and came from Hoth, you'd probably be down to your skivvies.
There you go. See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Skivvies. Stacked skivvies. And Babylon 5. They always
space
go together.
Skivvies.
Huh.
Okay, let's go to the voicemails.
Was there ever any incidents of anyone on Babylon 5 streaking or skinny dipping?
Well, we never got to see anyone in the lake. They looked like, if you look at like some of those long shots of the interior of the station, it looked like there was some kind of body of water. But I can't think of any incident where there was that level of undress. Someone in the chat room, help us out.
Has anyone ever seen anyone skinny dipping in the lake? That'd be kind of funny to know.
Or the fountain on Centauri Prime.
Or the fountain on Minbar.
Oh, there you go.
Or the fountain pen on Sheridan's desk.
That'd be a little tough.
It's a skinny dip in that, yes. You could skinny dip with it.
I honestly wonder if anybody would even notice a streaker running through the Zocalo. Just, okay, what was that?
All right, Jeffrey, during production, was there any incident of somebody just running across shot just for grins and giggles?
No.
No. And exactly how bundled up were you when you were in the encounter suit?
Was I wearing skivvies? Is that your question, really?
Yeah, that's definitely my question, yes.
The wardrobe will tell you that I rarely wear underwear.
And for some reason...
Which only begs the question, does an energy being have the ability to go commando?
Wouldn't you like to know?
That's why I'm asking.
As soon as he said that, strains of "Let me entertain you" started jumping into my head.
I think you need to get us out of here.
Yeah. Okay. Quickly. Get us out of here. We'll come back and do some deep geeking.
Yes.
What happens when science on the frontier collides with supernatural potential? What happens when cryptozoology meets genetic engineering? What happens when curiosity and an open mind meet fundamental and often deeply disturbing philosophical questions? What happens when ghost hunters intersect with the most bizarre behavior humanity voluntarily performs? You get a podcast. The Weird Show. A podcast not nearly as serious as this promo. TheWeirdShow.com. Subscribe and see your world differently.
Digging down to the most obscure facts and fandom, this is
And we're back with our deep geeking segment. This week, we are back to the opening volleys of Season 5. The episode is Strange Relations.
Yes, in which, we got all kinds of little strange relations going on. I think the biggest point we get is round two of the Lockley-Garibaldi fight. Knockdown, drag-out brawl. It's precipitated when Bester comes on the station because he's coming for the telepaths and down below.
We've got Garibaldi Lockley 2. We've got Garibaldi Bester 4.
Yeah.
The rumble in down below.
Yeah, there's all kinds of fights going on. We also have two individuals who have been at each other's throats before and will be in the future, but having an odd truce of sorts. Let's start with the Garibaldi Lockley thing, and like I said, it started with Bester's arrival on the station as he's coming to claim the rogue telepaths, which as Sheridan points out to Lockley, or Lockley points out to Sheridan, is perfectly legal. She has to answer to EarthGov. And Sheridan points out he's caught in the web of his own good intentions. But when Garibaldi finds out that Bester is having tea with the captain, he shows up ready to take Bester's head off. Lockley, of course, has him tossed in the brig, and I, that was a nice touch. Later on, when they're talking and they're trying to get to the basically the bottom of it, as Lockley goes into the to lock up and says, "Let's thrash it out now. Okay, let's just get it all out in the open." She reveals that she has had relations, if you will, with Bester prior to another in another assignment, and he actually helped her.
Yeah, saved a few lives.
Exactly. So, as she points out, you know, she has to call it like she sees it. You know, she says to Garibaldi, if she went by what everybody's report said and just the report, she would have shot Sheridan on sight. But one of the things that I really like is you really get a better sense that Lockley almost out Garibaldi's Garibaldi. She comes at him and doesn't flinch away. And I think, you know, where you've got Sinclair, who understands Garibaldi's pain and gives him another opportunity to redeem himself.
Mm-hmm.
You have Sheridan, who comes to understand what Garibaldi brings to the table, and recognizes, well, you know, he's got his issues, but in the end, he's a good man. So we just accept that Garibaldi is the way he is. Lockley just basically says, "You're being a jerk, and you need to get over yourself."
and even when we find out later that she has a similar experience, she doesn't use it as a crutch the way he can use it, you know, using that pain to hold people off. She's just like, okay, enough.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, you know, she's like, you know, what's your beef with me? It's like, I don't know you, so I don't trust you. It's like, well, you know, that's most of the universe. And she says, just get over it. Okay, what's next? And they go to the next one. You know, her comment to him that she knows that he thinks she's got some dark secret hanging over Sheridan and is manipulating him. And this is in one of those instances where she calls him on his paranoia where other people wouldn't. And she says, you know, you've got a real narrow worldview if that's the only way you can see things. You know, to be fair, that's all Garibaldi knows when you look at his past.
Mm-hmm. And it actually is funny because you're reminded of that later on in Day of the Dead. You know, what is it Dodger says? How many other men have a willing redhead on their bed and don't do anything about it?
Yeah, right, exactly. Because he's got all that baggage. Yeah, mm-hmm. he just can't let go. He's trying to, you know, he wants to do the right thing, but he's just so messed up. You know, and you know, Lockley's point back to him, though, is, you know, there's one of us, you know, we either hash it out or one of us has got to go, and you can work from Mars just as well as you can here, so... You know, she's not taking anything from him. And when she finally reveals what it is that, you know, the nature of her relationship with Sheridan, that they were married for, what, she said a month, 30 days, felt crazy out of love. But she knows, he knows he can trust her, Sheridan can. And she also pretty much admits she was on, quote unquote, the other side as a symbol. And, you know, that is the last thing Garibaldi expects. And just when you think maybe there might be, he might be loosening up or not warming up to the captain, understanding where she's coming from, she basically knocks the pins out of, from under him again and says, "You're staying in the brig until Bester's gone."
Yeah, because she's got enough headaches to deal with. And
that's right.
Keeping Garibaldi under lock and key will work this time.
Right. And you know what? Her point's a good one, too. It's a matter of... courtesy, you know, I mean, it, as much as anything else, you know, teaching your child manners. You're grounded because you've been behaving poorly.
It's more of a reality check. It's like, look, you have to behave like a professional. You know, you can't prove what he did to you yet. Give it a rest, because if you kill him, you're up for murder.
Right. Well, here a comment to him. Too, at one point where she says, "What you do for your hobbies is your own business. Just do it where I can't see it or, and I can't hear it." And he's got this genuine thank you, like, "All right, that's all the permission I needed."
It's like, if you can space him without anybody seeing, I can't do anything about it.
Exactly. But on the same, by the same token, you are not getting out of here to do it.
Mm-hmm. Not today.
Right. Right. Which takes us back to Bester and his strange relation. There's obviously something going on between he and Byron, which, of course, we know later on that mm-hmm. Byron was once Bester's protege. And Bester feels betrayed by Byron. You know, his comment is, you know, be careful, Captain. They'll turn on you.
Yes. And before that, we see Lita acting as a intermediary, so to speak, interacting with the B5 staff, getting medical supplies. And there's something about that interplay between her and Franklin at the beginning where he's needling her about, you know, you can't steal this, you can't do this, but this was going to the lurkers anyway.
Right.
And then right at the end, he goes, if you need anything else, just ask. And she gives him this, oh, I'm going to hurt you, look.
Yeah, but, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, in a way, that's sort of a tragedy of the situation. As Lita's talking with Zach in the subsequent episode in Secrets of the Soul, you know, she basically, you know, when Zach expresses his concern that she's hanging around with those people, and she lays him out that, you know, nobody's, you know, she's done all this, but what has she got? Squat. It's one of those, it's almost tragic that she does forget that Steven has been in her corner. And I think that's kind of what he was trying to remind her in that opening scene was, you don't have to be sneaking around to do this.
Yeah. I can see that. And I think, like, we know that thing later with Zach, it always bugged me that we never saw more of the buildup of his, what's the better word, anxiety, discomfort with how close she was growing to them.
Yeah, no, I disagree. That doesn't bother me. But we'll discuss that when that episode comes along. For now, though, you know, it's quite evident that Lita was hoping that Zach was on her side. You know, there's a scene after the Bloodhounds have rounded up the telepaths with the help of the station personnel, and it's a completely nonverbal exchange. She kind of pokes her head around the corner where they're being held and makes eye contact with Zach, and you can see in her eyes she's pleading with him, like, you know, what are you doing? And he can't meet her gaze. You know, he kind of turns around. He's got this look. And you can tell he's caught because he wants to do the right... You know, there's that Zach dilemma again. He wants to do the right thing, but what is the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta follow rules and regulations. In that sense, Lockley has got an ally in Zach in that they are both... by the book types. If you can find a way around the letter of the law without violating the spirit of, or no, excuse me, if you can find a way around the spirit of the law without violating the letter of the law, they're all for it. And we see that later on with Lockley's 60-day ploy with Franklin.
Right.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But that, in this instance, back to Zach, that's where he's stuck. He doesn't see a way around that. The orders are very explicit. Give Bester what he wants, nothing more, but you got to do the job.
And it's worse for him in this case because he's actually chief of security. Before, when he was just one of the officers, there might have been a little bit of leeway. But here, he is the one in command of all the others. He has to follow the rules and make sure the people under him follow, you know, their orders too.
Right, exactly. He's the man in the hot seat, and he's got the responsibility now. And he takes that seriously, and that's, you know, again, that's one of those neat little complexities to the character that I like about Zach. You know, he's in the end always just the guy trying to get through the day. And unfortunately, you know, it's sometimes bigger than what he knows what to do with. So you know, his pain is palpable, and I thought that came across very well. Let's see, what else do we have? Well, we've got the situation leading up to that where Bester encounters Lita down below as they're initially hunting for the rogues. And, man, we'll talk about a game of one-upmanship. I really liked that exchange where Bester, you know, Bester is that he's the cat playing with the mouse. And when Lita first displays her power, the other bloodhounds are looking nervous, but Bester is just like, okay, now I've got more information to work with a potential opponent. And all he does is just start asking her questions.
It's actually,
wow, that's pretty interesting.
I saw it as more than that. It's more like he is like a kid with a new toy, because he's actually seeing a demonstration of her powers, her enhanced powers, which at some point in time he's going to have access to.
Or thinks he is.
Well, he believes he will. So it's almost like he's baiting her to see how far she will go and she can go. Because especially that one thing where, hey, we don't hear anything here. We should hear at least, hey, how strong are you?
Right, yeah. Well, and you know, she utilizes her ability to repel the bloodhounds. Is it a telekinetic slap or a telepathic slap? You know, that's
it's really funny Bester's. Because before he said that, I never thought of there being a difference. And it's like he's trying to figure out, okay, how'd you do that? Because if you're telekinetic, we can really play with that. And if that was just what did he say? Using your telepathy to activate the nerve endings. Huh. That's a cool trick too.
Right. But he keeps pushing it because he's like, okay, well, now you did it, but it looks like it took something out of you. How long can you keep it up? You know, can you stop three of us? Can you stop a half dozen? How about, you know, a whole bunch? What are you going to do? And you can see her getting nervous until she starts pushing back. You know, it's as much him playing that psychological game that he does. You know, because he's got that sly, like you say, he's got that sly look. We're playing, you know, not only is he finding out the limits of her abilities, but also just probing her emotional defenses. And when she starts to give back, well, I don't know what my powers are. I could rupture a blood vessel. He doesn't look nervous at all. His smile just gets bigger because now he has got her on his playing field. You know, he was trying to push her to see if she would break when she didn't, but basically tried to up the ante on his game. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, this is it. This is my game. And just said, okay, you know what? We'll be back.
Yeah. I couldn't tell. Was he happy that she had decided to go the necessary violence route with him?
I think happy isn't the word. I think there's that devious kind of, you know, that's the game he plays, and now he's got a new playmate. Because his reaction at the end of it, at the end of the episode, where Lockley comes in with a 60-day restraining order, that completely takes the wind out of his sails. It's completely not what he expected.
Regulations, go figure.
Right. But he knows that there's some game being played, but he can't figure out, you know, Lockley is the last person he expects to be playing a game. And in the same sense that she, to a certain degree, gave him the benefit of the doubt, he gives her the benefit of the doubt. As he says, you know, as a down payment of our good future relations, I'll abide by this. And, you know, but he'll be back. You know, he'll be back at 60 days, 1 minute.
One whole minute.
So I think that's the thing. You know, for him with Lita, it's all about playing that game. You know, what can he bring out of her for his own information, like you say? But that's, you know, that's kind of the game. And I mean, that whole exchange is a game where, you know, he says, I hope you haven't gone over to their side. And she's like, oh, I didn't think there were any sides. And, you know, he pretends he's not playing the game, but he's like, oh, come on, Lita. You know, their only side they're on is their side. And again, that's where the sparring comes in. And he's a master manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
Byron is, or Bester is. So, and this is one of those episodes I really like because it's slowly ratcheting up the stakes. You know, he knows, you know, there's the whole sense of impending doom coming. You get that, but what exactly it's going to be, we don't know. We just know there's trouble. And the best part of it is in the grand tradition of Babylon 5, everybody has their own agenda, but I don't mean that in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters know what they're after, what they want, what they're trying to do, and unfortunately, it comes to conflict. Byron doesn't want to resort to violence. He wants to be left alone, but you can see how much it eats him up to just give in to the bloodhounds. And you know, let them beat him up, and you can tell he really wants to strangle Bester. He absolutely wants to, and Bester in that scene at the end when he's talking to Lockley and just kind of dropping hints, you got to keep an eye on them. They're not to be trusted. His hand on Byron's shoulder, which is kind of creeping up his neck.
Yes.
You know, and then whispering these little asides. You know all about that, don't you? You can tell that he, somewhere down in there, heard Bester to the core.
And there's this one moment where you see the frustration on his face that he can't take him with him right then. And that you it's like, you know, the kid was given the big stick of cotton candy and then said, oh, wait, nope, can't have it. And the kid's like, oh, you didn't just do that.
Right. And the thing is, he's not the kid that gets sad that you took it away. He's the kid that said, you promised.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You promised me. So we're getting the pieces set up and around the board. And again, this is one of the things. This is why I really like season 5.
And we have one more piece, I believe, that's being set up here between Jakar and the royal court.
Yeah, I like it. That was a nice light touch without being goofy stupid. One of the things that I really caught this time around is exactly the lightness of being of Delenn.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what she's doing is going to appeal to that
devious side of Jakar.
Right. But also understands that it's different devious than Bester. I mean, it's a kind of an interesting dichotomy now that I say that. Bester's devious because he wants to hurt and harm.
Mm-hmm.
This is devious, and Jakar likes it because it is actually about healing.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the whole point. As Delenn tries to sell Jakar on becoming Londo's bodyguard. And I love it when she just gives him enough rope to lead him to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, it's got to be somebody who's this blot. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. But, you know, the humor of it appeals to him.
Yeah. And especially, when she words it in such a way where he goes, a Narn in an official capacity in the Centauri royal court. Ooh.
Yeah, right. How could he not resist that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he loves it because it is funny and wonderful all at the same time. And Londo's comment later on when Delenn tells him about how it would be a symbol to the members of the Alliance, how old enemies come together, and he's like, did you sell the Jakar on this? And she said, yeah, you bought it hook, line, and sinker. You know, in so many words, and it's like, you know, and what is Londo to do? And that's one of the things that I really like about that adds to the tragedy of Londo's fall coming up, because you get the sense that he's resigned to his fate of what it means to be emperor. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he really doesn't know what that fate's going to entail, you know, and it's sad because he kind of embraces what he thinks his his future will hold, and it's not that at all.
And I think the saddest part is, even though he's fixated on how it ends, it doesn't seem like he's ever considered what best good he can do before that end.
Right, right.
And there's something else. Literally, it just now dawned on me. Delenn was either intentionally or unintentionally the instigator of all of the threads of conflict in this episode. Because it starts off with her talking with Lockley.
Right.
Garibaldi overhears part of that conversation, and he's like, he seems to be more convinced that Lockley has something over Sheridan, because Delenn acknowledged that there was something there. She talks to Franklin about doing the research on the cross species
infected potential vectors,
right,
yeah.
Right. And that leads to information that Lockley uses to confront, confound Bester. And then we have this setup where, Londo's, I'm doing what?
Yeah, right, right.
So Delenn, with her bright, cheery, shedding light everywhere, just kind of, she plucked a domino here and watched it go off in the distance. She plucked a domino there, and it goes, and the consequences, intended or unintended, were there. She just plucked a domino. That just dawned on me.
I didn't think of it that way either, but that's funny that you bring that
very,
up.
Very funny.
Yeah. We're seeing more of Corwin, which I like. And I like the relationship that starts to develop between he and Lockley.
Mm-hmm. And it is more of an administrative assistant role than it is the XO role.
Yeah. Yeah, it's parking ships and handling that kind of business. Trying to think what else is going on.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Yes.
is Joshua Cox still on your list of people to try to contact?
He is number 1, 2, 3, 4th on the list right now. Yes.
Sweet. So we will.
It's after Greg Mayday, Mike Behar, Jerry Doyle, Josh Cox, and Haley McLean.
Awesome.
There you go.
So eventually we will get to talk to Josh about the growth of Corwin.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
What else? I think we covered a lot of it.
I think we hit everything there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. We are done with the deep geeking today. As always, send in your comments. And we're going to take a quick break and get to some of those comments.
I'm Tim. I'm a carologist.
And I'm Michael, and I'm a carologist.
And I'm Jeffrey, and we are carologists.
Yes.
And you are too. Okay, let's get right to it.
Toyota hybrid.
Toyota.
The Toyota Camry hybrid. And
yeah,
loved that car.
That was wonderful.
So freaking smart. It was smarter than me.
You take it off road?
About once a year, I play in the sand with it. No.
Because it just seems that so many people have vehicles that have four-wheel drive and never use it. Don't even know how to turn it on or why. I really feel like Mazda has always kind of had their finger on the pulse, and yet they don't flaunt that.
Add your voice to the conversation at www.carology.tv.
And a little bit of feedback, commentary, questions, and hopefully answers.
Oh, we got answers, all right.
Whether or not they're the ones you're looking for, we shall see.
Right, exactly. We don't promise that you get an answer of any value, but there you are.
Was it answers $1, relevant answers $5?
Right.
Okay, let's see what we got here.
Hi, guys. It's Edmund from Greenville with a correction.
Uh-oh.
If JMS had known he had a fifth season, that fifth season would not have ended with Rising Star, then Sleeping in Light. All indications are the fourth season would have ended with Intersections in real time, mm-hmm. the fifth season would have started with Sheridan's rescue, leading to the Earth Civil War concluding around mid-season. The Minbari Civil War would probably have run concurrently, with our two leaders taking care of their own business at home before reuniting to form the Alliance. The telepaths would have been slowly introduced as background B-stories from the end of Season 4 on, not as a dominant thread at the beginning of Season 5. Things wouldn't have come to a head there until after Sheridan stepped down and Ivanova took over, having become involved with Byron in the meantime. We would still have had what happens after Happily Ever After. Most importantly, we would have still had the fall of Centauri Prime. Why do I believe this to be true? Well, partially I'm standing on the shoulders of the uber-researcher and sage over at the JMS News forums, Joseph DiMartino, but, as you heard yourselves, we know the story had to conclude this way because...
Think about B5s, that I always want to talk about consequences. Ending on a happy, jingoistically one moment would be the simplest thing in the world, but I chose not to do that. The fifth year would be about those consequences. But you're correct in that consequences, to me, are what the story is all about. Choices yeah. and consequences.
Be seeing you.
Is there
I hate it when he's right.
Yeah, is there anything Edmund can't nitpick apart to the point where a rebuttal is useless?
Damn Psycor operatives.
I am Edmund of Psycor.
Yeah, he is.
Rebuttal is futile.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, you don't get an answer then at that because you answered it for yourself, so yeah. There.
Okay, Edmund wins. Next one.
Hi, this is Andrew in Tucson. I figure after listening to the JMS two-part podcast that you're going to get at least 100 calls, so let me be one of them. Whenever I hear about Crusades, I just feel like writing a letter to JMS and just write down, find someone to write your ideas in a book, publish it like you do with the script books, and everybody will be happy. I will follow it by at least 100 and maybe 200 pleases because word processing can do that easily. I remember my K-Pro 2 could do that with vigor. Great way to start your new fiscal year. Speaking of fiscal year, that reminds me, what does the Babylon 5 podcast and the state of Arizona have in common?
I don't know what.
If you figure out a good punchline, let me know.
Yeah, I know. I both dry, bone dry.
Except for Michael, I think he's getting well lubricated.
Hey guys, wrap it up here. I just got to listen to the Feedback Palooza, and that one guy just totally bagging on Jeffrey. Jeez, I gotta stick up for the guy. I mean, come on, you know how delicate his ego has to be. I mean, his most renowned acting part was where he's completely covered up from head to toe and you can't even see him. And you actually use somebody else's voice whenever that character speaks. Is that being an actor or being a prop?
Oh.
Huh. Discuss.
Ouch.
No, but it's true. You know what? Here's what the real measure of it is. It's all about whether or not your mom is impressed.
Mm. Yeah.
My mama couldn't see me on TV, so it really is all sort of moot. It's a big old waste of time.
I have some good news for you then, Jeffrey. I was
talking to my mom?
No. I was browsing
She
the,
still loves you.
Yeah, I was browsing the internet for some B5 collectibles, and over at Intergalactic Trading, they actually have a section for autographed cards. Do you remember the card with you in, it's you by yourself in the Kosh outfit, but without the helmet. So you've got that really silly grin on your face. And
yeah,
sadly,
I've got cases of them sitting right over there.
Intergalactic Trading is selling them for $30 a pop.
Nice. There you go. Retirement right around the corner.
Yeah.
That's very
there
good.
There you go, Jeffrey. You need to
sign
a bunch.
You want to hear this?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You hear it? That is the plastic wrapping that goes around an extremely rare piece of B5 memorabilia. This is a tiny little What is that? 5.5 inches. No comment, Tim. it's a little
That's
miniature. It's a little miniature bus stop. It is a little bus stop. It's got glass on one side and it's got the little roof. It's a regular bus stop you would see in any urban setting. And on the side of the bus stop is where they put, typically in real life, you see the, you know, promotions or advertisements, the posters for the week or, you know, whatever they're pimping at the time, right?
Yep.
And this little miniature bus stop has a promotion for Babylon 5 on TNT. This is exceedingly rare. This is a very special promotional piece that came from TNT and
really?
Was sent to, I believe, the cable operators.
Was it like a Lego bus stop or?
No, it's like a custom made. I mean, it's cool. It's very, very cool. Exceedingly cool.
Dude, you need to take a picture of that one.
No, it's going to go to some lucky investor.
I can tell you right now, Peter is jumping up and down in the chat room saying, I want it, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Peter is.
Okay.
We have any other voicemails?
I think we got one more over there.
Yay, Gary hasn't filled up the mailbox. Just curious, after that JMS interview, will the movie star Jane, the ISN anchor? Because if so, it'll do gangbusters. If she's not in it, not so much. We need more Jane. What say you?
I think if we get as much Jane no less Naname as we possibly can.
It's all good.
It is all good. Now, I saw this commercial, and I've seen it two or three times, and I've been looking at it. It's a commercial for, your credit score kind of thing, not like a free credit report thing, but it was the commercial is a bunch of teenage kids getting all geared up for the metal con, and they're ready to go, and they get in the car, and mom's driving. And, you know, the punchline is, dude, why is your mom driving? And the one kids go, well, you know, when I bought all those snowboards and didn't pay the bill, well, they checked out when you apply for a car loan. But I'm looking at the mom, and I swear it looks...
like Maggie Egan?
Like Maggie Egan, but not quite, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was like that one, was it? There was like a cereal commercial or something like that where... the mom was played by, what's her name, Marie Marshall, Dodger. And it took me the longest time. It wasn't until like she flipped her hair a certain way, and I'm like, Dodger. I totally didn't recognize her until she did that.
That's because she wasn't wearing fatigues.
There you go. We need to keep an eye out for other people in commercials.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, any more? That's it for the voicemail?
That's it for the voicemails. You got any emails?
I got a couple emails to go through here. This first comes from longtime listener Hillary Geffen. She is listening to show 160, she says, The Learning Curve Deep Geeking. She says, I think that Garibaldi and Lockley both knew deep down that as much as he or she was right, the other one was right also. Garibaldi knew it is not the military's place to coup, as she says. And Lockley knew that if something so evil manages to seize power, the only thing powerful enough to expel it is the military. That being said, I don't think that Lockley sat out the war. Not knowing what actually lurked in the heart of President Clark, I think she fought against the military coup. I agree with Tim that Lockley's marriage to Sheridan was a bit ham-handed. The big problem is that JMS is usually so deft in his storytelling that a clunker stands out so much more. If it had happened on BSG, I would have rolled my eyes and not thought about it again, because that's how Ronald D. Moore writes. But I don't expect it of JMS.
Okay.
So there you go. I think, you know, getting back to Strange Relations, I think that the recovery is good in how Lockley describes that relationship with Garibaldi, you know, why it didn't work out. It has to be a give and take, and neither of them wanted to give. Both of them wanted to
lead.
To lead, yes. But having said that, it's more like, you know what it's like? It's like the ice skater that does the quadruple triple axel and lands funky but manages to make a nice recovery.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what this is.
Okay, I can go with that.
That's how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. All right, one more. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I agree with the thing where I don't think she would have been the type to sit out.
Yes, yes. Again, it's still left a little ambiguous even when she's talking to Garibaldi and she just says, the president knew I was on the other side.
Mm-hmm. I think the real question to ask is, did she engage in any combat against the...
Army of Light.
The other side, the rebels, and did she destroy any of them? I mean, what? Because most of the major encounters between Clark's forces and the rebellion forces, so to speak, happened with the ships directly under Sheridan's command. And I think he would have known if he had gone up against, you know, ships of hers, or they know that she was on or involved with.
Right. Right. Well, there was that action around Orion 7, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm. Only other story.
Right. Yeah, but you're right. Then that's the one question I don't think was ever answered specifically.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, one last email. This comes to Brian from New York. He just writes, in the episode with Mac and Bo, they are charged with taking Delenn to a life pod. So apparently B5 did have them, but my assumption is the pods were for ambassadors and such high-ranking officials only. Again, as we talked about it, I think that, you know, if there were life pods, it was strictly for that kind of a level of person, because how do you evacuate 250,000 people?
Yeah, you don't. So there's
exactly.
So it's more, I guess it makes more sense that there was only, like, I don't know, 25 or so for ambassadors to use to get out. But civilians would have been toast.
Yep, exactly. That's just one of those things. You just don't tell anybody about that. And there's so much that happened on that station that, you know, it's not likely people would have been able to get to lifeboats.
That's true.
So,
and if anything, that having a crush of people pressing towards the hull to get to life pods would have been dangerous, because as we saw, where did the breaching pods come in? From the hull.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're sending people running in a direction where there's could be firefights. That's not going to work.
Right. And then what do you do? Lead them through the, try to get them out via the boarding gates?
Nope.
Again, it's a bottleneck. Right, exactly. Not happening. All right, well, that's it for feedback for this week.
I
got a little bit of feedback, too. Well, I got
some
emails.
Do you?
Cool.
Yeah, well, I do, but I won't say who they're from, because those people know who they're from and that sort of thing. But
okay.
Yes, I am. I apologize to those who are due some goodies from my archives, from the whole thing that we did with, you know, send Summer to Jeffries to come clean this thing up. So anyway, I apologize for those. I'm working on it right as we speak, and I'm going to get this done and taken care of. Everybody's going to get their goodies really soon.
Yay.
And I thank you for that. And for the other people who asked, and you know who you are, no, I wasn't part of the JMS conversation as a condition that JMS set forth to do the conversation. So that's all we need to say about those two things. So there you go.
Excellent.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Okay. And if that's it, there's no more feedback. We crave your feedback. If you want to send us an email, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. You can also join in the discussions over at the forums, farpointforums.com. Visit our website. If you haven't visited the website, we have news and other goodies there. That's babylonpodcast.com. If you can, please hit the donate button. It keeps us going here, especially now that it's 117 degrees during the day.
And you went there willingly, you know.
Uh-huh. Hey, wait a minute. At least I don't have snow to shovel.
Oh, well, I don't either, really.
But I'll trade the heat for snow on my driveway any day. If you want to call in your own voicemail, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
the year that B5 content came upon us all.
Oh, jeez.
Laugh. There's nothing funny about that.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.